Welcome back. Cavagancers Live. Awful glad you're here with us. Thank you for being here with us. Joe Heschmeyer's here with us. He's our guest this hour. And you are welcome to call and ask him whatever you like about the Catholic faith, whether you're Catholic or not. 888-318-7884. That's what we do on Open Forum. We take calls from anybody on any aspect of the Catholic faith. And if we know the answer, we'll give it to you for free. 888-318-7884. Joe and I divide up the questions. He takes 100% of them, and I take the rest that are left over. Joe Heschmeyer, thanks for being back here with us.
It's good to be back. That is technically a dividing, I guess, one over one.
There was a player, I can't remember, but do you remember Wilt Chamberlain once scored 100 points in Hershey, Pennsylvania? Do you know that Wilt Chamberlain had 100
points? I did not know that.
There was another player on the team that used to tell people he always remembered the night that he and Wilt combined for 101 points. I can't remember. Maybe that's an apocryphal story. I don't know, but I do think it's funny. Because I think you and I are doing a great job answering the questions, Joe. I think you and I are doing a fine job.
I have a related hockey stat. I just looked it up to double check.
All right.
The NHL record for most points scored by a pair of brothers.
Yeah.
Is by the Gretzky brothers, but it's divided a little bit unevenly. Four of those points are by Brent Gretzky and 2,857 are by Wayne.
So, but the two of them combined, that's a wonderful number.
Yeah. They beat every other pair of brothers.
Well, as you said, the last hour, we are all different in our talents.
Yes. I'm not claiming to be the Wayne Gretzky of this at all. I just
no, like you are the Wayne Gretzky of apologists. I think what you're saying is you're the Wayne Gretzky, Wilt Chamberlain of apologetics, and Joe DiMaggio as well. All right, and the greatest football player. Who's the greatest football player? And Joe Namath.
I think he meant Patrick Mahomes.
Oh, I forgot you're from Kansas City.
I am from Kansas City. This is a bad week to mention it. We just lost, but it turns out to be successful as a quarterback, you can't just be really good at throwing. Someone also has to be able to catch the ball.
It's a team sport.
And, it turns out.
I remember there was a game where Tom Brady's wife tweeted out something to that effect after the game. Like, well, he threw it good, but they wouldn't catch it.
I think yikes.
Tom probably had to say to her, you know, that's not really how a team works.
Yeah, maybe don't put hexes on the other players.
Right.
She's a witch for the record. I don't mean that in a pejorative. I mean in a literal sense.
Wait, who's a witch?
Tom Brady's wife. Ex-wife now.
Ex-wife, yeah.
She practiced witchcraft. He actually got into it himself. It's a really unfortunate story.
Oh, I didn't know anything about that. You mean like a Wicca-type witch or another?
Yeah,
kind of
yeah.
Witch?
Oh, and yeah. So he attributed a lot of his success of doing stuff with this dark art.
Oh, no. Man, you really brought the show down, Joe.
Hey,
holy
here's
smokes.
Some fun sports anecdotes. And yeah. By the way, if you needed another reason not to root for Tom Brady.
Wow. Wow. Joe Heschmeyer. He's a Patrick Mahomes fan, and he hates everyone else.
What is it? Not true. I just wish Tom Brady went about things in a more honorable manner spiritually.
Okay. Wow, you are way out on a limb there. Welcome to all our Boston listeners. Thanks for joining
on
us.
Catholic Call-In Show.
888-318-7884 is the number. If you want to call and complain about that last statement, please do. I can't wait to hear that conversation between you and Joe.
I hope they aren't feeling too deflated.
Oh, no. Come on. Please, Joe. Please. Not acceptable. Just not acceptable.
Waiting for a Brady bunch of calls.
888-318-7884. Oh, you know what? We're not going to the phones right away because Thomas the TikTok engine is here to ask a TikTok question. Thomas, please, no sports puns and don't get Joe started again. Just act like it didn't happen and go on, please.
I'm sorry. I just have to I have to think about it. If Joe's the Wayne Gretzky of apologetics, then what does that make someone like me? Am I like the... I don't know, the bench player on the World Series team or something.
You're gritty.
You're the Brett Gretzky.
I'm like gritty. Oh, thanks, Joe. Okay. Hey, he's actually one of the best
adorable mascots. Yeah.
He's actually one of the best accounts on TikTok, I'll have you know. So that's a better compliment than you thought it was.
You are the Fernando Tatis of apologetics.
That's all I need to hear. Whatever the steroids version of apologetics is, then that's what I'll be on.
Now, you guys are so negative.
I'm a Padres fan, Cy. It's in my blood. Okay.
Just ask.
I'm anti witchcraft. I'm sorry, Si. I know these are.
All right. So you guys picking the real hard targets: witchcraft and steroids. You
were really, that's right.
Which are really some moral spiritual witchcraft and physical witchcraft.
Thomas, please, I beg you, ask the question so we can get this over with.
Okay. This is a Catholic Answers show, correct? Just so I'm clear. All right. So this question came from our TikTok channel. That's why I'm here, is so that Joe could answer it for me. Joe, this person wants to know if Catholics could give him an example of taking veneration too far, improperly worshiping a saint.
That's a good question, but I think it's actually a little bit malformed. And by that, I mean, there's this idea that many people have that worship is just like a little too much respect, a little too much veneration. But veneration and worship are two different things. And so we distinguish them by talking about latria, like worship, adoration, and dulia, which is honor. You can honor your mother and father. You can honor civil authority. You can honor people that you love. You can honor great Christians that you know here on earth. You can honor great Christians in heaven. Nothing about that is dangerous. All of that is good and laudatory. Now, there is a way to worship, but that's a different thing in kind. In the same way that you don't have to say, well, how good of friends am I with someone before we're husband and wife? It's like, no, those are just different things. They're related in some way, but they're different things. You don't have to worry about, like, am I too close to my friend? Does that mean we're dating now? No, it doesn't. It's a different category entirely. Well, likewise, latria and dulia are different categories. And so an example of worshiping Mary or worshiping the saints would be offering the Mass to them, where you offer Jesus's body and blood to them. There was a small sect in early Christianity that tried to do this with Mary and was quickly condemned by the Catholic Church because that is actually idolatry. Or worshiping Mary and saying she's worthy of divine honor. Asking her for her prayers is no more that than asking you or me for prayers would be.
Okay, so it sounds like the real distinction is not so much one of degree, but of like what kind of honor you're giving her.
It is not a question of degree. It is entirely a question of kind. In the same way that friendship and romantic love is not a difference of degree. Now, there is a sense in which we can say romantic love is maximal friendship, but that doesn't mean being really good friends with someone means that you're in love.
Great. Thanks, Joe.
Yeah, you bet.
Thanks, Thomas, TikTok engine. Thanks very much. Joe, I've started to notice when Thomas is on recently. I don't know why I didn't notice it first, but do you notice what a good radio voice he has? He sounds really good.
Yeah, he actually would be really good. We've been talking about how we need a good host for this show.
Oh, yeah. You're looking in the wrong place. I mean, it's Cy. I would be a fantastic host. Yeah.
I
need to gather myself. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back with more calls, and maybe the baby will come and we'll get a different guest for the rest of the hour right after this on Catholic Answers Live.
Stay with us for more Catholic Answers Live.
Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Magnificat. Published monthly, Magnificat features daily Mass, prayers, articles, and meditations in step with the liturgical rhythm of the Church. On the web at magnificat.com.
EWTN uses the power of radio to reach people whenever and wherever they're searching for answers to questions about their Catholic faith. EWTN Radio is heard on over 500 domestic and international AM and FM radio affiliates. For a complete list of programs and how to hear EWTN Radio, visit EWTN.com and click radio. EWTN, the global Catholic network.
Back to Catholic Answers Live. Joe Heschmeyer in a canceling mood today. Careful, you're going to get canceled. you're canceling. You tried to cancel me before the break.
I thought you were going to say canceling Tom Brady, but he already canceled himself. That's what retirement is.
Retirement is not being canceled, Joe. That's not at all.
Now we're going to get a lot of calls from people who have time on their hand to call us.
Boy,
don't mean that against real retirees.
You are determined to make enemies today. Eric in Arkansas, please save us. Eric's watching on YouTube. Go ahead with your question, Eric.
Hey there. Hi. Congratulations on the baby.
Oh, thank you very much.
I'm expecting a son myself in December.
Hey, congratulations,
Eric. You know what babies love? And I'm going to give one to you. They love books about the Eucharist. So if you hang on afterwards, I'm going to give you The Eucharist is Really Jesus, Joe's new book on the Eucharist. enjoy and let that baby enjoy.
I think he worked that in seamlessly.
Wonderful. Thank you very much.
Yeah. You're very welcome.
What's your question, Eric?
He just wanted to tell us that he's got a baby coming in December. He's got a question. My bad. Okay, sorry, Eric. Go ahead.
So when I believe it's Paul is listing out the conditions for a deacon or a bishop, and he says that he's supposed to be the husband of one wife and then lists out some other virtues and, be a good head of household and have his children mm-hmm. under control. I have a friend who places a lot of importance on that as almost prescriptive and then mm-hmm. Uses that to kind of argue against the church and priest celibacy. And so I was kind of wondering what the response to that would be so I can answer him a little better on that because I don't view it that way, but I'm not sure how to express that.
Okay. Yeah, that's a great question. So it should be very clear that Paul is talking about a ceiling and not a floor. He's not saying you need at least one wife. He's saying you need at most one wife. And, you can't be a divorcee. Because under Jewish law, you could divorce your wife and remarry. And under pagan law, there was all sorts of stuff you could get away with. And a bishop shouldn't be doing anything like that. And so you don't want to have, here's the bishop's ex-wives. That's what Paul is talking about. How do we know he's not talking about how celibates aren't allowed to be bishops? Because Paul oversees the church and is a celibate himself and talks about this. In 1 Corinthians 7, he argues that it's a higher spiritual state than being married. And for that matter, Jesus. So if the Protestant read was correct, Jesus wouldn't be allowed to be a bishop because he doesn't have a wife or kids. And it seems very weird to have a rule that disqualifies Jesus from governing his own church. And so in Matthew 19, Jesus talks about the superiority of celibacy. So after he lays out his vision of marriage, which is that divorce and remarriage is sinful, the disciples are scandalized and shocked by this. And they say, if such is the case of a man with his wife, it is not expedient to marry. And Jesus doesn't disagree. He says in verse 11, this is Matthew 19, verse 11, not all men can receive this precept, but only those to whom it is given. For there are eunuchs who have been so from birth, and there are eunuchs who have been made eunuchs by men, and there are eunuchs who have made themselves eunuchs for the sake of the kingdom of heaven. He who is able to receive this, let him receive it. So if Jesus has just said, if you can do it, if you can practice celibacy for the sake of the kingdom, you should, that is completely inconsistent with saying you have to not do that in order to be a bishop in the church. And so this is a case of just taking like one line completely and radically out of context and putting it against the whole of the rest of what the New Testament has to say about how marriage is. So you got three categories. You've got being aflame with lust, as St. Paul puts it. That's bad. You have marriage. That's good and God-given. You have celibacy, which is even higher than that. And so the distortion of this is a real shame because it means that in many Protestant circles, there's no place for holy celibates. So if you're someone who aspires to be in ministry or wants to lead in any way or share your gifts, there's an enormous pressure to get married based on this really distorted misreading of St. Paul.
Eric?
Yeah. I like that very much.
Okay. That'll be helpful to you?
Yes, it is, especially those verses there from Matthew.
Good. Matthew, I didn't go very deeply in 1 Corinthians 7, but all of 1 Corinthians 7 is St. Paul talking about marriage. And then in verse 8, he says to the unmarried and the widows, I say that it is well for them to remain single as I do. He acknowledges that he is celibate. And then he says, but if they cannot exercise self-control, they should marry. For it is better to marry than to be aflame with passion. So in two verses, he literally says, celibacy is better than marriage. Marriage is better than living in lust.
Eric, thanks. Hang on, though. Don't go anywhere. We want to send you that book, so hang on. And congratulations again on the new baby.
Yeah, congrats on the son.
Patrick's in Newfane, New York, listening on Catholic.com. That's our website, Catholic.com. Patrick, thank you for the call. Go ahead with your question for Joe.
Do you think that human beings made in the image and likeness of God as mind, body, soul composites form a near perfect image of the Trinity?
That's a good question. I want to nuance Oh, go ahead. Oh. Sorry, go ahead. I'm going to, you know, please. I didn't know you had more.
I would quote Catechism 368 and 1 Thessalonians 5:23 and compare our death to Revelations 22:1.
So it's a good question. There are these dimensions, you know, soul and body. And there is, of course, a sense in which we are made in the image of God. But we don't use the particular kind of the soul-body distinction as an image for the Trinity for a pretty simple reason. The soul is not the body. The body is not the soul. But they also aren't one thing. In other words, you can have the two separated. The soul and body separate in death, where the Trinity is actually inseparable. So it's not just that you can't, you can like logically distinguish them. They're just separate things. So soul and body together comprise a person. But we don't want to say that the Father is one third of God or anything like that. And so a related, but I think a stronger analogy using the human person is based on the interiority of man. And so St. Augustine in On the Trinity, I believe it is, compares the Trinity to the mind, the knowledge by which the mind knows itself, and the love by which the mind loves itself. That if you think about that, that you can distinguish love, knowledge, and mind in some way, and there you'll find various shades of that, but it isn't like your mind is just one third of your mind, or its knowledge is just one third of your mind. It's not like that, but all of this is immaterial. And so that is, I think, a stronger sort of depiction of the Trinity. As for anything being a near perfect image of the Trinity, I don't think we have such a thing. I think in all of the Trinitarian images and analogies, they're weak branches. We can climb the tree, but don't spend too much time sitting on just one of them. So if thinking about the duality of man helps you a little bit, okay, but don't overdo it, because there's a lot of discontinuity. There's a lot of dissimilarity. Likewise, with even like the psychological analogy, which is what it's called, that Augustine gives us, that is helpful, but it's not perfect. There are no perfect, or I would say even really near perfect, analogies that get to this divine reality.
Patrick, thank you very much for the call. I'm going to keep moving because there are quite a few folks on the line. Gil, our old friend in New York, listening on Ave Maria Radio. Gil, welcome back. Hello.
Hi. Hey, yeah. Good evening.
Good evening.
May God be glorified.
Amen,
I'm getting
brother.
A delay there. Can you guys hear me?
Yeah,
you're coming through
fine.
I'll tell you what. You just go ahead and ask your question, and then we'll let Joe answer it. And if we're not doing too much back and forth, the delay won't matter.
All right. May God be glorified. I want to mention Proverbs chapter 3, verses 5 and 6, and another verse I'll give you. Just wish they get rid of the echo, though. Okay.
You're not coming through echoey. You're okay.
You sound good, Gil.
You sure? Okay, let me try again. Can you hear me now?
Oh, wait, we could hear you all fine right. The whole time.
Still getting that echo, though.
Yeah, right. I'll tell you what happened, and it's very unfortunate. Sometimes that happens, Gil. There's a stray electron goes awry somewhere, and you're just going to hear that echo when you're talking. So if you asked us if Joe could expound on Proverbs chapter 3, verses 5 through 6.
Yeah, let me mention it. I'll take my ear off the phone. Okay. It says, trust in the Lord with all of your heart, and do not lean on your own understanding. In all your ways acknowledge him, and he shall direct thy paths. And the other verse is Psalm 119, verse 105, says, thy word is a lamp unto my feet and a light unto my path. There we go.
All right, yeah. Gil, we'll leave.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, go ahead. Pot Gil down. He's going to listen off the air, and we'll let Joe address these.
Yes. So I think those are good edifying passages. Just I don't know if there's a particular question there, but I think it's a good reminder that one of the dangers we can fall into is trying to direct everything ourselves, trying to figure out our own meaning and purpose. There's a famous passage in a Supreme Court plurality decision where it talks about at the heart of freedom being this idea to create our own meaning in the world. And that's actually a terribly nihilistic vision, because that is only possible in a world that's meaningless. In other words, if I'm looking at a math problem, there's an actual answer to that. And if I'm instead told, you know, freedom is just making up your own answer, okay, that suggests there's a certain meaninglessness. And so we can easily fall into this false vision of freedom, this false vision that it is not only my right, but even my duty to create meaning in my life. And that is bleak and that is false. That it is God who made you and who understands who you are and what you're about better than you do. And so meaning isn't something that you invent. Meaning at its core is something that you instead discover, but you can't discover it entirely on your own, which is why, as Proverbs 3, 5 to 6 says, we trust in the Lord with all of our heart. We don't rely on our own insight, and that instead we acknowledge him and allow him to make straight our paths. So it is that sense that meaning is something we receive from God rather than something that we give to ourselves. So I don't know if that's the direction Gil was hoping we'd go, but that's one of the things I really love about that passage.
Now, could you just give the same answer, but use echo the whole time? No, don't do that. Sorry, Gil, about the echo. It's usually just, it's easy to talk with you, and that was a little difficult, but we'll talk again. So we'll look forward to that. Andy's in Wisconsin listening on the Catholic Answers app. Andy, thank you for waiting. Go ahead with your question for Joe.
So actually, my question is for you, Si.
Oh, like the other Gretzky brother.
What? I'm about to be Brett Gretzky.
So I watched the video that you guys sent out to the Society 315 the other day, where you gave that talk about evangelizing Jesus in like the techno world.
Yes.
And first, I was very disappointed there was no techno music there, so the title misled me.
Do you know you're not the only person who was upset that there was no techno music? I think that Zach, who produced that, I think he actually suggested that we play techno music, and I think I nixed it. So I apologize
for
that.
You're just like, techno.
I don't actually know what techno music is. So I just
I think a lot of what Gil was hearing on the last call was just techno and yeah, you know, even that was electronic distortion. Right.
Okay. But so, well, I'm glad you watched the talk. Thank you. What was your question?
Yeah. So at the end of it, you mentioned how one of the remedies for today is to build intentional communities. And I was wondering if you actually had examples, like instead of like high level things, but like actual concrete examples that you have seen, or Joe, you can answer too if you've seen these, of groups who have actually made these kind of communities. Because usually my experience in the church, whenever there are attempts at making these communities, they either feel kind of forced or sort of empty. So
I just have good examples. But I didn't understand one thing you said, not high level things. What does that mean, not high level things?
So like I was looking for more like practical advice for it. So rather than just saying like, oh, we need like your example in the talk was JP2 like had a community, but that was kind of, you know, back then. So like today, have you seen a group where like you've gone to a parish mission or something and you saw like people were like, we did like X, Y, Z in order to like make these communities and it's been going really well?
Yeah, the kind of the dream there or the ideal would be if that was the parish, if the parish was itself a community that gathered around the sacraments out of love for Jesus the Lord and then went out in charity together into the world to share the good news the truth is we've talked about many times on this show, there are lots of sociological and historical reasons why parishes are not working that way right now. But that would be ideal. And there are people who are doing wonderful stuff in some parishes. But you want practical stuff. And the reason I asked you about why you said not high-level things, because I do think there is a tendency in the modern world. I had it myself for many, many years, and I criticize it in myself now. I think I've let go of it. And that is to say, what we need is new forms of community. Because the old forms of community, especially monastic communities, are really, really good. And I think after the Second Vatican Council, many people thought, well, it's time to move on and create, you know, like Dorothy Day was doing or whatnot. And I am all in favor of what Dorothy Day was doing. But the first thing people should ask themselves is, do I have a vocation to a monastic, priestly, or other religious life? Because those are the tried and trues. Those work. And I actually am of the mind that there are probably hundreds of thousands, maybe millions of people who God is calling into monastic life, into Christian communal life, maybe into the mendicant life with the Dominicans and the Franciscans. And people are missing that call. So that's why I asked about the high level thing, because, and I'm going to continue this on the other side. But I think the first thing we should do is really think about monastic community, and young women should think about being sisters, and young men should think about being brothers. And we should think about these as not an old fashioned thing, but as the next wave. But we'll talk with Joe about it, get his take on the other side. Excitement is building for Catholic Answers Annual Apologetics Conference, I Believe in God. There's still time to join us September 21st through 24th in sunny San Diego as we welcome Scott Hahn and an all-star lineup of speakers, as well as your favorite Catholic Answers apologists. Join us for a conference that is sure to ignite, encourage, and inform your faith. Seats are still available, but they're going fast. Visit CatholicAnswersConference.com or call 888-291-8000.
If you're not a Bible scholar, the full message of how the Sunday Mass readings fit together can be tough to comprehend. Apologist Carlo Broussard is here to help. Join Carlo every Friday for the Sunday Catholic Word Podcast. In each episode, he unpacks the scripture readings for that Sunday and brings them all together so you can better understand and defend the faith. Visit SundayCatholicWord.com to subscribe. That's SundayCatholicWord.com.
Want to get right to the core of Christ's saving message? Want a roadmap for living the life Christ calls you to? It's time to look again at the Beatitudes. In his new book, Heart of the Gospel, How the Beatitudes Show Us God's Plan for Happiness, Father Sebastian Walsh demonstrates compellingly how these eight declarations make up the foundation, the essence, and the final goal of Jesus' teaching. Heart of the Gospel illuminates the scriptural passages from which we get the Beatitudes, explains the significance of their wording, their order, and their timing in Jesus' ministry. And it draws out edifying parallels and connections with salvation history and the lives of the saints. Most importantly, Father Walsh offers wise counsel from his own work as a priest and teacher to help you live the Beatitudes in your own life. Order your copy of Heart of the Gospel today at shop.catholic.com or ask for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Hi, this is Jonick Williams. We bring you the truth of the Catholic faith on Women of Grace tomorrow at 11 a.m. Eastern here on EWTN Radio. Now, back to Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I'm Cy Kellett, your host. Joe Heschmeyer is our guest. It is open forum this hour. Your call is welcome, 888-318-7884. But somewhat unusually, Andy from Wisconsin called and asked me a question. Usually I don't do the question answering, but it was in reference to a talk that I gave recently regarding kind of how to address how to be a Christian in a hyper-technical world. That was kind of the theme of the thing. And among the things that I said was we needed radical Christian communities, and we needed to be, we need to live in them in a radical way. And so Andy was asking if I had any ideas about that. So all I was saying before the break, Andy, was that I don't think we should turn up our nose at the kind of communities that have already existed for a long time. And I think particularly monastic communities, I do think more young women and men should consider monastic life. I think they would be really happy in monastic life. Many, many of them would. Many who don't think that they would be should try it, because they may in fact be. And I do think that those communities already have, you know, 1,500 years of tradition to help them be stable and fruitful. But on a less kind of old-fashioned note, or a less traditional note, I also think, Andy, that there are people are building these kind of communities, and I'll just give you an example here at Catholic Answers. That's a form of work community around sharing the gospel. Or you will find mothers' groups, or you find these beautiful groups in many parishes, which are called grieving groups or the grieving ministry, where they help people who are grieving. And grieving is not a five-day thing. You have the funeral and it's over. These are people who are walking with the grieving. And many of these are quite stable communities, very, very Christian. Anyone can join. And they're very, very fruitful. So those would be my ideas. Joe, I don't know. Do you have some thoughts?
Yeah, I think that's all very good. I think the danger we run into is overthinking community and being maybe unrealistic. Like, okay, let's all move into the exact same place and we'll all just live together in a compound.
Like the monkeys.
Division or whatever. You mean the zoo or the band?
The band, the monkeys, they all lived in a house together.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That is a real thing that happened.
Sorry about that. Go ahead.
Yes. No, it's all right. I'd forgotten that part of the show. I used to watch that. But what I was going to say is, like, in my own life, I guess two things. One, it's really dangerous to try to go to heaven alone. And if you want, I believe it's the Office of Readings for January 3rd. It's St. Gregory and St. Basil. They have a common feast day and they were friends. And it's a reminder that we have the obligation to help each other get to heaven. And it's so much easier if you have someone you can lean on and that who can kind of support you on the way. And so Gregory and Basil talk about seeing in one another a standard of holiness, that they would look to the other person when they would otherwise maybe have lost their way. And so that's really important and really helpful. It's, you know, one of the reasons why we're born into families and why families have such an obligation and responsibility, because family is really the first place this community should be playing out, that your family should be a tiny, you know, as St. John Paul II calls it, a domestic church, a little church in the home where it's a small society ordered towards God. And then you can build other friend groups, whether it's friends or families that you're close to, and kind of build out from there. And that might just mean touching in with each other, opening up with each other, spending time together. It doesn't have to be a really complicated thing. We're going to go through these books in this order. In my life, and I think in the life of most people, it plays out just in saying, okay, now I'll give you an example. I've got three guys I regularly get in touch with. And so we try to get together once a month. That obviously doesn't happen all the time. And then after we get together, we look at our calendars and say, okay, is there a time a month from now we can get together? And it's that level of intentionality. It's one night a month, roughly. And then sometimes it's more like one night every 6 weeks or 2 months or 3 months. But it's just having a time to be there together. And we can kind of be open about what everything going on or the highs and the lows. And it's really edifying and supporting. And I was talking with another friend who complained about how he doesn't have that. And so I think there's a hunger for this. And a need. And I think I see it in a lot of men. I'm sure it's in a lot of women as well. This sense of like, we are not meant to just be traveling alone through this journey. And so it's not crazy to just say, I don't know, invite another family over for dinner or brunch, or just, hey, we're going to go to the park. Do you want to go to the park with us? Or I think there's a special role single people play in this on both sides. They're often the loneliest. They're also often the ones that have the most time. So if you're an extrovert or if you're someone good at hosting, take that initiative very seriously and invite others into your life.
Andy, any of that what you were looking for?
Yeah. Yes. I think the part of like just kind of not overthinking it, I guess the questions I would have later, but I'll maybe call another time, would be like, what do you actually like get out of these communities or how do you feel about them to kind of know if you're actually in one or not? But I've taken enough time, so I don't want to. Okay. Keep taking more time. So thank you.
Although Joe, well, hang on, because I do want to send you a book because nobody ever asked me a question. So I feel like I want to send you a book, but did you want to address what Andy just said?
Yes. I want to suggest a book by St. Elred of Rivoloux called Spiritual Friendship. And he's exploring, why do we need friends? He's exploring it as a medieval monk, which is really fascinating. And it's one of the few works I know on the good of friendship and on the types of friendship. And the whole thing is a conversation between him and another monk that he's friends with. And so even the format is really beautiful because it speaks to this role that iron sharpens iron. So what does a friend group or a community of any kind provide? I think it provides several things. One, it speaks to the fact that man is a social animal. We were not meant to be alone. not good that man should be alone. That even a celibate, and in some ways especially a celibate, is called to still be in community, not in radical isolation. Even radically, the hermits, the people who lived in solitude, would still be visited by people who they would care for. And so even they didn't live alone, and they were in spiritual communion with the whole church. And so they were constantly lifting up others and their needs in prayer. And so we want to recognize that this fulfills a basic human need that we have, and it fulfills or helps us to fulfill our spiritual duty to take care of our neighbor. But they can also do a lot of other things. If you're struggling in a certain area, having someone you can talk through, whether it's a doubt or a sin or whatever, can be really helpful. But also just having a common life. The people you spend the most time with are the ones you're going to most emulate. As our Lord said, where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. So if you spend time investing in mass media and popular culture, that's where your heart's going to be. If you spend time investing in God and neighbor, that's where your heart's going to be. And so that's what I think it provides.
Hang on, Andy. We'll send you a copy of The Eucharist is Really Jesus if you'd like it. All you got to do is hang on the phone and give us an address, and we'll send it off to you. And thank you for the opportunity to have that conversation.
Let me send him your book as well.
Okay, let's send him two books. We'll also send him A Teacher of Strange Things, Who Jesus Was, What He Taught, and Why People Still Follow Him. Anything else that you want me to do before I go on, Joe?
No, that's good.
Okay. All right. Very good.
I noticed you liked my answer, so I just wanted to make sure everybody else noticed that too.
I don't think I didn't. Let's just put it that way. Don't think I didn't notice that. Scott's in Pittsburgh, listening on the Amazon Alexa. Scott, thank you for the call. Go ahead with your question for Joe.
Hi, how you doing?
Very well.
How are you?
That's good. Good, thank you. I want to know, I'm a former Catholic, but I still prefer to go to confession in the Catholic Church. Because of the privacy. And, I'm just wondering, am I under an obligation, or do I have to, or is it wrong or illicit, or, in Catholic terms, would it be a mortal sin to not tell the priest that I'm a former Catholic who is fellowshipping currently in a Protestant church, but is that wrong of me to not tell the priest that?
That's a very good question. You should definitely tell the priest that, and here's why. When we have a twofold relationship in religion, we have a relationship with God, and we have a relationship with neighbor, and especially in our Christian neighbor, in the upbuilding of the body of Christ, and so we talk about the communion with Christ, the head, and also with the church, the body of Christ. And it's one communion. And so when you're dealing with the sacrament of confession, there's a healing that's happening in both of those ways. And so for this reason, under canon law, typically only Catholics can go to confession. Now, that doesn't mean they have to be good Catholics or in confession, right? Like, they're Catholics who are wanting to be restored to union. There are certain circumstances in which the priest can hear the confession of a non-Catholic. And this is one of the reasons why you should just put all your cards on the table and kind of explain how things are. Your case is actually a little more complicated because under canon law, it sounds like you've got a Catholic baptism. So you are, in a real sense, a Catholic from our perspective. But you don't want to be restored to full union with the Catholic Church, right? Like, you want to still fellowship with a Protestant church, I'm assuming, and not come entirely home to the Catholic Church. Is that fair to say?
Yes, that is fair to say.
Okay. So, and I don't say that in the spirit of condemnation, but just that's really good information for the priest to have, so he doesn't think something is going on that isn't. And then he can give you counsel, and he may or may not be able to give you absolution depending on the circumstances, but he can at least, you can have a private confession, and he can be considered bound by the seal. Dioceses have given rules on this, so you don't have to worry about the priest blabbing it to somebody else. So you can have the privacy that you're looking for. You can have the spiritual counsel. I don't know if you believe in the graces of sacramental absolution or not, but that would be the one thing that would probably not be possible to provide here.
Okay. I actually do believe in the graces of sacramental absolution. And I guess my feeling was, is that I understand that, you know, why there's a prohibition of people who aren't in full communion with the church not receiving the Eucharist. And I agree with that, because it's like you have to be, I do believe that you have to be fully believing that this is, you know, Christ in the Eucharist, and you know, in a, you know, in good standing, you know, because that's even in the Bible that you have to be in good,
that's right,
moral standing to receive the Eucharist. But you know, to me, it's you know, I guess I was feeling that, well, confession should be, you know, forgiveness should be in a, something that's available for everybody, you know, and anybody. And I guess that's, you know.
Yeah.
And,
so in, and, in one sense, it is. But the difficulty is, if you want to be restored in your relationship to Jesus, the head, but not restored in your relationship with Jesus's body. And so that's where things get more complicated. Because if, okay, if we take seriously this idea, the church is the body of Christ that St. Paul talks about, and if the church is a visible society, like a city on a hill, like Jesus does, then it's dangerous to say, I want to be in communion with the shepherd, but not the flock. And so this creates all kinds of issues. So it sounds like you're in a really fascinating kind of spiritual place in terms of the things that you, it sounds like you still share and believe that are pretty distinctively Catholic. So if I could, I don't want to be too aggressive, but if can I just give you an email that you could, I'd love to hear more about your journey and see if I can help in any way, kind of maybe get to some of the issues that are more at the heart of what caused you to leave. And if there's anything that there's still like questions you've got, but at radio@catholic.com, they'll pass your email along to me. And I'd be happy to kind of keep this conversation going and kind of explore, yeah, what are the possibilities available here?
Okay. Yeah.
I mean, if you're comfortable, the ball's in your court. I don't want to push you, but if you're comfortable, if you're interested, I'd love to hear more about your journey and kind of get a deeper sense.
Okay. I'll consider that. So it's, the email is radio@catholic.com.
But the other thing you can do is just hang on the line and Edgar will get an email address from you.
Oh,
but
yeah,
you may want more time.
If you want to do that. But if you want, you know, yeah, he can give you my direct address as well. But it's up to you if you want to. I don't want to, you know, I don't want to force you into a conversation you're not ready for or comfortable with.
Yeah, maybe that's the way to do it, Scott. Maybe we'll give you Joe's address and then you use it whenever, when and if you decide that's what you want to do.
Okay.
Okay, hang on. Edgar will get it for you. Edgar doesn't know how to spell Heschmeyer, though, I'm pretty sure.
Don't worry, you don't have to.
Do you know how to spell Heschmeyer? I mean, I've never
seen it. I forwarded an email I got to my wife and said, what should I do in responding to this? And she said, the school misspelled our last name the same way. And then it turned out it was not even misspelled in the same way. So I was like, do you know how to spell our name? There's an extra letter missing here.
Well, I mean, when she married you, you didn't tell her there was going to be a test, did you?
I know. It's like,
leave her alone.
Having an easy last name to Heschmeyer. So
thanks,
that was
Scott.
The first sign it was going to be just more of a burden to be married to me.
All right, we got to take a break. We will be right back with more Open Forum with Joe Heschmeyer right after this on Catholic Answers Live.
You're listening to Catholic Answers Live. Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Real Estate for Life. Real Estate for Life connects homebuyers and sellers to real estate agents while supporting pro-life organizations. On the web at realestateforlife.org.
The most original and exclusive Catholic content is on EWTN Radio.
One time somebody said to me, why don't you air these people? And I said, no, because I don't think they're Catholic. He says, by what right do you have to say that? I said, I own the network.
Mother Angelica Live Classics, every morning, 2 Eastern, on EWTN Radio.
Who was the first Catholic in your family? Were they evangelized by a friend, a coworker, a stranger? Did you ever think that you could be that person that God uses to save a soul, and that soul could save their family, their grandchildren, and generations to come? At St. Paul Street Evangelization, a Catholic nonprofit, we train, equip, and mobilize Catholic disciples to do the urgent work of evangelization. Catholic Answers is supported in part by St. Paul Street Evangelization. StreetEvangelization.com.
Welcome back. Catholic Answers Live. I am Cy Kelliger, host. Our guest is Joe Heschmeyer. It's spelled with an H. And we started this show by saying we didn't know if Joe was going to make it to the end of the program with us.
No baby yet.
But apparently still waiting for the baby. One thing I would ask of our listeners, if you would be kind enough to do so, please say a prayer for Anna as she prepares to deliver their third.
And if anyone asks, just say I had the foresight to make that request.
Well, yeah, as Joe wanted to say,
if
you've got a prayer for, and for all moms going through that, the crucible of childbirth. Soon, Joe, one thing I have noticed about pregnancy is they do come to an end at some point. You do
it's
get
true.
A baby. Yeah.
Yeah, Jesus actually compares the suffering that both he and I think the disciples are going to undergo to childbirth, where after it happens, you're just like, oh, this is amazing. This is wonderful. And it's actually a good model of suffering that, like, hey, this is horrible. Let's not pretend it's not.
Right.
But some good will come out of this.
Right. Have you ever met a woman who's pregnant? Like, you meet her when she's pregnant, and then you have a weird kind of surprise when you see her later and she's not pregnant. Like, you thought, oh, she's a pregnant lady. And I just met a pregnant woman, but I'm probably the only one who
I think
that.
You might be the only one on this. I would love to hear if like later share this later idea of not understanding how pregnancy works.
So well, no, it's not that I don't understand. It's just that
pregnancy lasts for a short time. He's telling himself.
I know that. How pregnancy. Well, I've all right. Maybe I don't. I don't. The depths of my ignorance are probably hard to plumb, but let's go to Michael in Los Angeles. I don't know. It's just a weird thing. Like, you meet a woman and you think that's how she looks. And then you see her like 6 months later and go, oh, that lady who I met was pregnant. That's not actually how she looks. This is how she looks with a baby.
I'm not touching this one with a 10-foot pole.
Good Lord, help me. Michael.
I'm sorry, pregnant women. Sai is praying for you. He doesn't understand that is pregnancy.
It's not an intellectual thing. Good Lord. Michael in Los Angeles, watch it on YouTube. Please save me, Michael. Why do I get into trouble when Joe's on? Go ahead, Michael.
Yes, I have a weird question. Well, it's not really that weird. I have a friend who was baptized Catholic, and then when she got older, she married a Muslim man and converted to Islam, but she was baptized and confirmed Catholic. So I don't know what's the deal, what would happen to her in case she passes away and dies. You know, I'm not sure if someone leaving a Catholic faith into Islam or another religion automatically makes you a possible going to hell.
It's a good question. So we want to be clear on a couple things. Number one, there is no other name under heaven which we've been given by which we're to be saved than Jesus Christ. That everyone who is saved through Jesus. And the relationship we have with Jesus is very different as Christians than the relationship in Islam, because they deny that Jesus is actually God. And they deny that he's the Son of God. They deny that he actually died on the cross. So they believe he's a great prophet. They have a lot of respect for some of his teachings, but they don't believe the same things we believe about Jesus. And so this is a spiritually dangerous place to be, because they can't put their trust in Jesus in the same way. They believe there's a necessity of Muhammad to come along as a further prophet. And so there's all of these things that are important dimensions. So those are things that should give us pause. Those are things that should give us a great concern to pray for people who leave Christianity for Islam, because it is spiritually dangerous. You are taking your salvation kind of into your hand. But we want to caveat that to not rush into immediately judging and condemning those to hell, because God knows which things are conscious, knowledgeable, willful sort of acts of betrayal, and which things are innocent, even attempts to try to find him and are just misunderstandings. And here I would say this. On the cross, Jesus prays for his persecutors, people who put him to death. And he says, Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do. Now, the people who put him to death, by our standards, it seemed like they knew perfectly well what they were doing. But Jesus sees in them that there was an ignorance that he sees as a basis for them to be forgiven. And so we should take all of that seriously, that this is a grave error. This is something we should encourage her away from. We should pray for her in, and we should take very seriously. But on the other hand, we don't just rush to, oh, you're definitely going to hell, you're definitely damned, because we haven't been given that kind of insider knowledge. So, you know, the U.S. seal on the, like the presidential seal, it has an eagle, and it's got 13 arrows in one hand, or beak, or an talon, whatever, and 13 olive branches in the other. And the idea is, we prepare for war, but we look to peace. We want peace, but we're preparing for the worst. And so likewise, we should prepare for the fact that people we love may go to hell if we are just apathetic, or if we sit back and don't say anything. But we don't want to just assume that. So we want to prepare for the worst, but we want to hope for the best at the same time.
Michael, I'm going to say thank you and continue moving. I do know where babies come from. I'm just going to say that before I go on to the next one. And Joe's being really
mean. I hope someone tuned in and had no context.
Yeah, completely out of context statement. Oh, my gosh. Good for Cy. He figured it out.
Let's go to Terry in Wisconsin.
All right, Terry. Thank you for helping me, Joe. You could see that I didn't know which one to go to. Yeah. Watch it on YouTube. Terry, thanks for the call. Go ahead with your question for Joe.
My question is about the Nicene Creed. Is there a really good commentary to read to go into deeper study of it?
Yeah, I think a good place to start is the Catechism of the Catholic Church. So part one of the Catechism is called Profession of Faith, and it's just a slow kind of unpacking about what we believe, and it really goes through the creed basically line by line in section two. And it's very lengthy. And so, yeah, I think if you look at that, you'll get a much deeper kind of explanation of what each part of the creed means from a reliable source.
Terry?
Yeah.
That work?
Thank you. Yeah, that sounds good.
All right. You're very, very welcome. You can, if you don't have the Catechism of the Catholic Church, it is available online. So you can always read all that Joe suggested right there online.
And Felix, I might have time for Felix. Yeah.
All right, Felix, I'm glad you did, because I just said his name in Dusted, Florida, listening on 690 AM. Felix, thank you very much for the call. You're going to have to be quick if you'd like an answer from Joe.
Yes. Thank you, gentlemen. This is a difficult question to ask, but I'll try to keep it as a few words as possible. I have been a friend of mine showed me a posting by a Catholic source that alleges that the third secret of Our Lady of Fatima was not fully divulged, that Saint Lucia, the oldest of the three peasant children, told it to Pope John Paul.
Okay, I'm going to have to get Joe's comment on the last. Was it divulged or not?
I mean, Benedict XVI said it was divulged, that the third secret of Fatima was divulged. And there are a lot of people who don't believe him, but I have no idea who I would trust more than Benedict XVI. And I don't think the people I'd put in that category would be random people from the internet.
Felix, I'm sorry that I know it felt like we were rushing you there at the end, but we actually were rushing you. We had to zip. But thank you very much. If that was not adequate, please call back tomorrow.
Yeah, I'm sure that was very brusque. So sorry about that.
Joe Heschmeyer. Next time I see you, I think you'll have number three.
Yeah.
I know you. He always does this to me. I know number three already exists and Jesus already loves baby number three, but number three will be out here in the world with the rest of us. Was that acceptable?
Amen.
Wait. Okay, good. God bless you. God bless Anna. Lots of people praying for you. Please do pray for Joe and Anna as they get ready to welcome any minute now at baby number three. See you tomorrow for more Open Forum, God willing, right here on Catholic Answers Live.